For November the 21st, 2014, we talk about Thimbleweed Park, Shadow of Mordor, and we ask you if you've kickstarted any games. Welcome to the 84th level. My name is Cole Ross.
My name is David Meismith.
My name is Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. We're rocking the trace tonight, you guys. We're doing it freestyle once more. That can't be the title again, though.
So it'll be like six style.
Yeah, because we did it twice.
Three style, two.
Yeah, nine style, 12 style, and so on and so forth in that fashion. I don't know. So there are lots of ways we could probably begin this episode. So last week I was ranting. As Ben, I'm gonna defer to you. Is rant okay. The right word for what I did last week?
Well, I mean, you rant often, okay. So yeah, let's just go with that. Let's have that be the default.
I'm trying to remember back to when did I start becoming the angry guy? Because that has seeped into several elements of my life, like especially at work. I was at we have like a little video watching event every Friday, we were watching. So you know this thing on YouTube, and there were these YouTube annotations up as you see, right? It was really bothering me because it was like just ever, like there was always one of these things up and they were in the way of like what otherwise would have been a really, really good video. And in the comment time afterward, I raised my hand as I often do because I like commenting and adding to and dominating the conversation. And I began the sentence with, "Does anybody get as angry as me?" And then before I could finish that sentence, people said no. Does anybody get as angry as me? No. I deserve that.
I don't want to interject anything because I want you to continue to dominate the conversation.
Sorry.
Dominate.
It's called hosting.
Yes, right.
Oh, man. So I don't know when I started becoming the angry guy, but last week I was talking about my spyware problems. I know this is not interesting for anybody. It wasn't interesting then. It continues not being interesting now, especially because I solved it thanks to Phil Holmes. Thank you, Phil Holmes. I began last week with a complaint, and I want to begin this one with a thanks for your.
So, what was the solution? Nuke it for more of it?
No, God, like I have 4 days to do that. No, it was just a bunch of very practical tips about like safe mode and such. And so,
yeah,
probably like elementary level stuff. But because I've been a Mac user for 7 years now, 8 years now, something like that. Not quite as common sense to me. So, operating at a little bit of a handicap, but it's been fine now. And I was able to like play Morrowind for 45 hours over the course of the past week.
Oh,
yeah.
You got two jobs.
Three.
Yeah. Podcasting on top of that.
Yep. I guess that's technically considered part of the podcast. I'm so tired, you guys.
What is sleep?
What is sleep? Has anybody done anything remarkable this week?
I actually won a hackathon.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so our university had their big semesterly hackathon. Basically, you have 36 hours to make something cool, and then it's judged. So basically, we took the campus shuttle system. They have a website and smartphone app. That displays where shuttles are, so you can track how long they have to get to your stops. We basically took that and put it, put the ETA on a Pebble smartwatch.
Okay.
So, we won. I actually, a little bit like, it was interesting. Yeah, I think it was kind of a thing where sort of the take home was there's a lot to be said for doing something that people immediately can see like how it makes their lives better, because in terms of just like crazy computer stuff. Like there was a team that basically made a virtual Rubik's Cube where like the Rubik's Cube doesn't exist. You just like in the air do a Rubik's Cube in your hand and like the computer does a Rubik's. Yeah, you know what I'm saying.
Oh, no man. No cameras or anything, it just knows.
Right, exactly. And just you know, and something like that, I think it's technologically pretty badass compared to a watch app, but still.
Well, I mean, yours has all the hallmarks of something that would get a lot of money on Kickstarter. Uses a
right, right. Yeah. I mean, yeah. So anyways, it was a really cool experience. It was a lot of fun. It's also kind of cool because our team was made up of me and another guy who are both PhD students in computer science, and then a freshman in chemical engineering.
Just hacks on the side.
Yeah.
He wandered in from a car.
So that was kind of entertaining.
He just wandered in from a car crash with a head wound. He kept on asking for help. Help, guys. Help. You guys just thought that he wanted to help you.
Yes, we'll take help over here.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's you know, that's kind of why the big thing now in computer science. It's, you know, kind of sort of the computer science equivalent of kind of the maker space and all that stuff. So it's a good time.
Oh, neat. Well, that's cool. Did you use APIs?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Runtimes?
Yes. Front-ends and back-ends. No SDKs.
Did you leverage disruptive opportunities?
Yes.
Cool. Did you use a JIT compiler?
Actually.
wait a minute. Okay. Hold up. Wait a minute. Did you say JIT instead of Git?
No.
We
also use Git.
Okay. Are Git and JIT different things?
Just in time compiler.
Okay.
And I'm not sure if JavaScript is. I know Java is. And I know Python is. I think JavaScript is not used with JIT.
It's not legit.
Yeah.
It's legit.
I think that I stopped knowing what I was talking about 7 years ago. Ooh. So. Oh, man. Yeah, guys, let's do an episode. About the normal stuff. We have some news. We've got the multiplayer talking about Kickstarter stuff. I think that Dennis saw one of my tweets today and figured, hey, let's do that. And then round it out with a what you've been playing, or sorry, the grind. There we go. Talking about the games we've been playing.
That's the right podcast.
Yeah, there we go. had to cycle through my little Rolodex there of which ones are you guys? Yeah. Oh man, sneak preview. Ain't been playing shit that ain't Morrowind, so hope you guys brought something to the table. It is time for the brief, where we talk about the things that we have seen happen in the world around us. Good save, Cole. Good save. Nobody saw that. Do you guys mind if I lead with one? Because I'm really, really excited about this.
All right. Go for it.
Yeah. So imagine my surprise and delight today when I see a minor wave on social media from Ron Gilbert and Gary Winnick, the creators of Maniac Mansion and also Monkey Island, you know, those old LucasArts adventure games, that they have launched a Kickstarter for a new game.
Oh, snap.
Oh, yeah. So it's called Thimbleweed Park. Is what it's called. It's on Kickstarter. It looks an awful lot like Maniac Mansion. In fact, most of their materials have callbacks. Some would say pandering to people who love Maniac Mansion. But because I am one of those people, I think that is perfectly fine. The way that they're putting this is, it's like opening a dusty old desk drawer and finding an undiscovered LucasArts adventure game you have never played before. And below that, they have an open desk drawer with a floppy, like a like an actual floppy, like five and a half or five and a quarter inch disk, white labeled with Thimbleweed Park on top of a Maniac Mansion box and Monkey Island, which makes me very nostalgic for when games were distributed in that way. And so this looks like it's going to be kind of a like a more, let's say, edgy take on that kind of thing. Like, it's not going to be censored and goofy like it was. Like, their key image has you using, it's a dude and a lady, and you're using a balloon animal on a blue corpse that is face down in the river.
No, that's actually approved by the Red Cross. Yeah.
Well, how else are you supposed to chew that corpse up?
Ooh. Yeah.
No, but
so they're doing Breaking Bad, point and click adventure.
Yeah. But it looks fantastic. I mean, it's the same kind of chunky pixel style, the same character proportions as Maniac Mansion. And this is my favorite little detail. In their backer tiers, which are, $5, $20. $20 gets you the game, right? $25 mm-hmm. is the what is it? Absolution, divine absolution tier. Yes, the absolution of guilt, which is specifically for people who pirated Maniac Mansion or Monkey Island when they were really young. It doesn't get you into the extra. It's just that $5 is there to make you feel better about doing that thing. And you can look for my good
chance at redemption.
Yep. You can look for my name in the in-game phone book because I donated to that tier. I think this is coming out in like 2016, so I guess I'm just one day going to be very happy to get that email sometime down the line. Mm-hmm. But this is a wholly welcome development. I'm excited.
That sounds
That's
cool.
Really yeah. cool. Wait, what have these fellows been doing lately? Have they been involved with any of the more recent kind of, like some of the Sam and Max, some of the pseudo revivals of the adventure genre?
Not so much with those. So like Ron Gilbert, he did The Cave, right? So he was the main guy there. They haven't been too terribly involved with any of like the previous, previous IPs. Like he did Deathspank for Hothead Games. Action RPGs. You know what? He consulted on Tales of Monkey Island. I'm literally just looking at his Wikipedia page now. Most recently, Scurvy Scallywags was his puzzle game that he put out. And I can't quite speak for Gary Winnick, but they've been active, but not like super, chasing that, that same aesthetic, or I guess,
sure,
or that,
sure.
that same genre so much until right now. Like one interpretation,
chasing the monkey.
Yes, one interpretation of this is that they could be, cashing in on this, but again, it looks great. So I don't care if it's a cash in, if it's good, like make something cool that is, I don't know.
That has bodies and rivers.
Yes. Yeah. Like they're perfectly within their rights to like use those names, I guess. I don't know. It feels great to me. I feel like I'm justifying mm-hmm. now. So I will cease here. Their video is great. Like the music, even. Hmm. So have either of you guys played like adventure games of that vintage? Like I feel like I've asked you this, but I don't.
Do you count? Are you afraid of the dark as an adventure game?
Yes, but that is not the same as these.
That's correct.
Yes.
The style is definitely different.
Yeah.
I would say the content's pretty similar, though.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
I played a fair amount of Freddy Farkas.
Oh, yeah. Frontier Psychiatrist.
That would probably be even better.
That boy needs therapy. Freddy Farkas, Frontier Pharmacist?
Pharmacist,
yes. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, and there was a Dinotopia game they came out with that was an adventure game.
Dinosaur Yogurt?
Yes.
Okay. No, was that juice? Fruitopia was a juice. Fuck. So that's my story. Go back this thing. It's already it launched less than I think 12 hours ago, and as of the time we're recording this, and it already has almost $100,000.
What's their goal?
$375,000.
Okay,
it's gonna make it. Like, if Tick Track has already said like, yeah, they're gonna exceed their goal. So,
What's their stretch goals? Because I feel like this is the type of game that can be hard to extend.
They don't have any stretch goals, honestly.
Okay.
Just higher and higher guilt redemption levels.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't know. Like, you're absolutely right. This is a game that would be harder to extend. I think that, in general, developers are kind of shying away from, like, let's give the community the ability to determine what's going to go into our game. And so, if they budgeted right, which I imagine they have, because they actually have a pie chart breakdown of what they're going to spend this money on, which shows that they've done their homework. If they budgeted this right, they could get up to, you know, right up to their goal, you know, maybe just a little bit past it and still be fine. And I would be perfectly happy as somebody who backed this project if they continued getting above and beyond that. And that was just money that helped them, like, work toward the next thing. Right. Like, yeah, not everything has to have like a goal attached to it, like, you know, above and beyond.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So good on them for stepping out the gate. Right.
Yeah. I guess I'm so used to everything in at the university is like grants and stuff. So it's like using that for something else. That's embezzlement. obviously, in this case, that would totally not be.
Yeah, they're a private company. Like,
yeah, exactly.
So here's the crazy thing. I'm looking at a screenshot of Maniac Mansion, and at the bottom in the copyright it says Maniac Mansion, copyright the Walt Disney Company, all rights reserved. Which I guess makes perfect sense because Walt Disney bought Lucas, which, you know, owned that copyright. That is crazy that Disney owns Maniac Mansion.
Hmm.
So are you waiting for like the original
the
movie?
Ride? Yes. I mean, they already have a mansion laying around, just unhaunted, and like, you know, maniacify it.
That'd be great if they started turning Tim Schafer games into Disney rides.
That'd be great. I mean, well, to be fair, Monkey Island pretty much is just Pirates of the Caribbean. the old incarnation before they fucking sparrowed it up. Before they drop that depth charge on it, fucking.
I know.
I'm feeling a rant coming off.
The later iterations in the movie series could have used more insult sword fighting.
Man. So before I continue walking down that road, who else has a story?
Sure. I've got something. Yeah, I would say entirely crazy. So there's a fellow who has finally completed his 2-year Double Big Planet 2 project to recreate the entirety of Final Fantasy VII in Little Big Planet.
Oh, good lord.
Yeah, Threnza on Twitter brought this to my attention today. There's not a place in my brain that fits.
Right.
Do you have further details? Because I just went cross-eyed.
Sure. It's 31 levels, and you can, I guess, watch like a playthrough on 113. Well, it's unclear if this is a playthrough or documentation. I only watched the first one on his YouTube channel, 113 videos.
Jesus.
And I watched most of the first one. It was like 15 minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking, there's a lot of stuff he created, and it's pretty much shot for shot. You know, the part I was seeing basically covered the first mission, the whole like terrorism mission where you blow up the city.
Yeah, make a reactor one. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was pretty much straight up, you know, like all the dialogue, the weird like opening scene where it's I really don't care about this game. What's her face walking around?
Aeris, yeah.
Thank you.
Waifu.
I'm now going to get hate mail. It's an accomplishment. I guess. I'm hoping that this was just like the world's most elaborate attempt to get a job at wherever the company is that makes Little Big Planet.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this answers a lot of people's prayers. People have been asking for a Final Fantasy VII remake on PlayStation 3 for years.
Finally.
Like, this strikes me as something that somebody that, like, did a prisoner make this, David? Is his YouTube username inmate 4179?
Wait, what does that mean?
No, just okay. Walk along with me to a fictional world where inmates are allowed to have YouTube accounts, but they have to use their inmate number as their as their username.
That seems legit. No bad could come of that.
Set up a Patreon for their legal for their attorney's fees.
I feel like that would look bad bad in court though. He's got Patreon. It's, you know, continuous funding. Obviously, this guy is planning on reoffending.
Yeah. Should have been a GoFundMe. Yeah. No, but just like think about that, you know, that prisoner who will make a scale model of the Vatican out of matchsticks, you know,
which hides a shank. Yeah,
yeah. a scale model of the
Pope shank.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. You just got shanktified.
A scale model of the Vatican made out of shanks. Why is this corn dog stick all red? Oh wow! There we go. So let's see if anything beats Shanktified for a title. Sorry, I didn't mean to lose my cool there. Huh? Yeah, that's for goddamn ridiculous. So, go ahead, Ben.
Yeah, I'm watching a video of it right now, and it seems extraordinarily unnecessary. Like, I guess it's cool, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, honestly, like, this one strikes me as a little weird. Well, just because, like, I can understand some of the... You know, I can understand some of the, like, recreating crazy things in Minecraft, because that's something that kind of lends itself towards, you know, it's definitely, you know, something that gives you explicit artistic tools and, you know, kind of lends itself towards, you know, having some artistic, I don't know. I just don't see, like, what is the end result of this, especially when it's literally shot for shot.
Yeah, I mean, I would, go ahead.
I think the issue is that it's, you know, complete emulation. It's not anything new, you know. It's just in a different format.
Oh, that's like, who was the author that basically plagiarized Don Quixote? I'm trying to think of it. Basically, there's an author who released a book that was word for word Don Quixote. And argued that his version was better because whereas the original was written like appropriate to the time period, his one was a period piece. It was just like the point being like say again.
So there's no space in my brain for that argument.
Yeah, the whole point, like, it was meant to be, like, some commentary on, like, the creative process and, like, the nature of original work. Like, the actual point was to, you know, with some you know, artistic statement. But yeah, that was a thing someone did. I almost feel like this is kind of that, where it's like the making art by directly word for word parodying something else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I see it similar as Gus Van Sant's remake of Psycho, where it's like, okay, you can do that, but you don't have to.
Yeah,
right. And I guess like I really enjoyed Star Wars Uncut or whatever, where it was like fans making Star Wars 5 seconds at a time. Mm-hmm. But that was the thing where it was very much like each fan, you know, do whatever media you want, like. If in your scene, you know, Chewbacca is played by your golden retriever, have fun.
Yeah.
I feel like there's more, I don't know. This is the, like, as has been said, this kind of breaks my brain.
Yeah. My version of Don Quixote is totally different. It's exactly the same, but you're supposed to read it in this voice.
Cool, you got a future in audiobooks.
Yeah. So I want to examine something that you said there, David, real shortly, which is that Minecraft has more room for artistic expression than Little Big Planet, because I see Little Big Planet as explicitly giving you these aesthetic controls, whereas a lot of what happens in Minecraft is mostly an engineering kind of feat, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't honestly, like, I didn't explain that well. I guess kind of what I mean is I feel like it's much easier in Minecraft to like create this Minecraft world, and then it's much easier to then show it off and like, here's this art I did, you know, it's I feel like it's much easier for someone to appreciate it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Versus like, here are these 31 Little Big Planet levels. Not so much that one's more powerful as an artistic tool, but I feel like one's kind of in a media that's more, if you were going to do this awesome work just so you know in order to show it off, I guess.
Yeah.
And yeah, it gets to the point where you're almost just like, why don't you just learn how to program and then make a game, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I wonder if his rationale is like, this is easier to share with people. Like, you know, just put this up on Little Big Planet store and get my name out there, and, you know, just use that recognition to leverage into something, you know, bigger and better. Or if it's something involved, like if he tried to make his own Final Fantasy fan project from scratch, not using this other platform, he would be really open to a cease and desist. Whereas I don't expect this to be around for long at all, really. Like, even this, I can see being hit with a cease and desist pretty damn hard, especially because he is using verbatim dialogue that I like know.
Yeah.
Right, as I'm watching this video.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, so I don't think that, I don't want to speak for you guys, but I don't want to be mistaken myself as saying that this is not impressive in some way.
Oh, it's definitely impressive.
Yeah,
it's
like,
just,
this is pretty ingenious the way that he has I assume it's a he. That might be unfair. You know, the way that this person has implemented it. But you're right. To what purpose and why all of it? Maybe it's not a story if they don't do all 113 videos. But
yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, I'm a little bit biased too, because like, I think this is kind of like, I don't get the point, but if somebody did this with like Shadow of the Colossus or Knights of the Old Republic, yeah, I probably wouldn't mind.
Yeah, I don't know. This, the more I think about it, the more cynical this seems, because it almost is like, you know, with Little Big Planet 3 just about ready to come out, people are really looking forward to that, and do anything with Final Fantasy and a bunch of people are going to you know, shit their pants with glee, like, haha, let me share this. Like, it seems very calculated. I don't know. Huh. Yeah, this is crazy. Any other thoughts on this?
No, although it's killing me that I can't think of who the other guy that did the Don Quixote stunt is. Sorry, That's bothering me. I realize that's irrational.
Ben, how about you?
Yeah, I got a small little story, but it's about Batman. Yeah. So apparently Rocksteady leaked an Easter egg from Arkham City, similar to, I think, 3 years ago, they leaked an Easter egg from Arkham Asylum that was about Arkham City. So now this one's supposed to be referencing the next game, apparently, although it's a little bit weird of an Easter egg. It's pretty cryptic. So there's one element in Arkham City, and I guess this, I don't know if it's really a spoiler or not, but that game's super old, so whatever. But there's one point where you meet the Calendar Man, which is one of the bad guys in Batman. He's mostly in the comics. Yeah. I can't think of him in the animated series.
He's like he's like an R-level villain.
Yeah, I think he might be in a couple episodes in the animated series, maybe, from the 90s, but... I don't remember for sure. But anyway, his niche is he commits crimes on holidays. That's his thing. But anyway, there's one point in the game where he's locked up in a cell, and that's kind of his idle station. So you can go talk to him at any point in time. But the one cool thing about it, and you know, people figured this out when the game came out, is if you talk to him on a holiday, he will say, like, he will reference it and have like a special bit of dialogue talking about that day. And so you can get an achievement if you talk to him on, like, I think 12 of the different major holidays throughout the year. And so the lazy way you can do this is just change your calendar on your PS3 or Xbox and then go and talk to him and then save it and then change the calendar again. But so people found this out a long time ago. But anyway, Rocksteady leaked through a fake YouTube account an Easter egg. If you set the date to December 13th, 2004, which is when Rocksteady was created, he will give kind of a cryptic message talking about the end of days coming and kind of the end of the Batman series coming up. And yeah. And so he references his own sort of work and his own sort of things that he's doing. But people think that that's referencing Rocksteady and like their early work and what they were doing. Huh. So it's not as tangible of an Easter egg as in the first game where they had like plans for the prison that was going to be in Arkham City. Yeah. So it's a little bit disappointing that you don't know exactly what the Easter egg is. But once again, it is kind of cool that they planted something in the game, let people try and find it, but then tell them where it is 3 years later.
Because so. Nobody thought to do that.
Yeah.
Or if they did, nobody shared it.
Yeah,
I mean, are you aware? Has anybody gone back and tried to corroborate this?
Like, there's a YouTube video of the of it happening. So I suppose I could double check and plug in Arkham City, but I probably won't.
That's fine.
So
yeah, I'm fascinated by that. If they put that, if that was in there on the original code, so to completely just get rid of all. You know, all of your save data and unpatch it, I guess, you know, to like decline the patch, jump in there and see, or if it was something that was patched in once they had an idea
of what they were going to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you think they intend for these Easter eggs to be so obscure that no one gets them? Or do you think they just keep doing it and people don't get it?
I don't know if it's realistic for that people would find them, especially with this one. You know, picking that specific day would be kind of a reach.
Except that I'm surprised that in any given day, I would think, you know, thousands of people would play the game and do that.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing, too, is since the date is before the date that the game came out, that's also kind of hard, you know. Yeah. And then the first one, the way that you had to activate it is you had to specifically put 3 explosion gels on a certain wall to get it. And so I don't think...
Yeah, that's kind of obscure.
Yeah. So it's really cool that they put these in the game and that they kind of have foresight as far as what they're going to do with the next game at the time of release of the previous game, kind of like Pixar, I guess. But yeah, I guess... Yeah, so this one... So. In short, I'm excited about the next Arkham game, but yeah. This Easter egg was just okay.
Your review, 7 out of 10.
Would not recommend. Yeah.
Oh, just quick side note. Pierre Menard was the author of the fake Don Quixote.
Cool.
Sorry.
You mean the real Don Quixote?
Yes.
You mean the real Don Quixote?
Multiplayer.
Now it's time for the multiplayer, where we read your responses to a question that we put out there, where we engage with you, the listeners. I feel a little bit off my game, you guys. Moving on, Dennis put this question up there, saying, have you ever kickstarted any games? If so, have you gotten to play them? If so, have they been worth it? So
should have released a flowchart with this. Yeah. It would have been short, but you know.
It's just a flowchart, a dollar with a line pointing to a hole. Yeah. Yeah, kickstarting games. I think you saw the Thimblewood Park. Yeah, let's talk about that. So Ben, what's Murph say?
Murph says, I've had much better luck with tabletop games than computer games on Kickstarter. Notable exceptions being Gods Will Be Watching. I'm holding out hope that Night in the Woods or Dropsy will be fantastic, though.
Yeah. I picked up Gods Will Be Watching on the from the Humble store here recently and have not played it. So, but it looks real cool.
I really like to imagine that when he says he's kickstarted tabletop games, he means that when he's losing at Monopoly, he's kicked a table over.
Yeah, I think most people have. That's the only reason we're not all playing Monopoly right now. Is that somebody,
the only way the game ends, yes. Yeah.
It's in the instructions. Oh, man. That Dropsy game looks kind of cool. That's made by a goon. Yeah, it's a clown who can't speak or understand language, so everything has to be put in through like rebuses.
Through what?
Rebuses, like little symbolic representations of ideas. Yeah. David, what's Jeffrey say?
Sure. Jeffrey says the only thing game related that I have kickstarted is the WAF live show, and I enjoyed that.
Thank you.
10 out of 10. Would recommend.
Yeah, still up there in the store. Mario Kart. Yeah. Sam Bear writes in saying, no, because I've been burned way too many times by pre-ordering games. I still occasionally get on Steam Early Access if the alpha build of a game sounds good. I think I bought into Starbound way too early, but seeing Kerbal Space Program evolve into an actual game has been fun. I will buy a Kickstarter game right when it comes out if it sounds like something I want to play. FTL and Shadowrun Returns immediately come to mind, and I can't wait for Berkeley 2. I think that's fair. I think that's pretty shrewd. Especially if it's something that's kind of bound to be funded, you know, like Berkeley 2 or Shadowrun. Like, if it looks like something needs help or will need help, I can, you know, like I would be able to make a case for, well, it's worth the $25 for me to see that this thing gets made, if I can, you know, play some kind of part of that. But you know, Kickstarter in general is just kind of treated as a massive pre-order anyway, so womp.
Why do people pre-order anymore? When was the last time that you couldn't get a game when it came out?
That's a good point.
I mean,
there've been close calls, but I've never not been able to get a game that I wanted to get.
Yeah, I've never not been able to. Like, even with something that's incredibly rare, like, you know, the store's only going to get like 2 copies. It's been fine. That, and also Amazon exists. Okay, I'll pre-order something on Amazon if I know I want it on launch day, and they're going to give me launch day shipping. That way,
sure,
I don't have to go to a fucking store and hear somebody be really, really smug about, you're lucky that I have this because you should have pre-ordered it. I'm serious. When I worked, I never gave anybody any of that shit. And when my coworkers did it, I asked them to please not do that, because it is a shitty way to treat people. Like, they can see how many piles and piles we have back here. They
you
know it.
courteously crash their conversation.
Well, you're standing right next to them. You wait for the customer to leave, and you wait until, like, it's like, just please, you know, that's my problem. I'm just not a satiate like that.
I feel like now pre-orders are some sort of weird, like, inverse insurance, where it's basically like the game companies, you know, you pre-ordering is insurance for us in case we make a crappy game that no one plays once it comes out.
Yeah.
Or no one wants to buy once it comes out. Yeah. You know?
I mean,
in case you forget to get your game.
Well, that just goes to the retailer.
Oh.
Yeah. No, like, essentially what it is saying is, I will buy this no matter how good it is, so I'm not going to vet this through any kind of, you know, word of mouth or reviews or podcasts or anything, you know? Yeah.
Going in blind.
Yeah. That's
why I enjoyed The Force Unleashed so much.
Yeah. I guess I'm lying. I did pre-order Dark Souls Dark Souls 2. At a store, but only because Amazon botched my order, and I wouldn't have it until like 2 days after launch. And when you're trying to beat a game within a week, especially an 80-hour game, those 2 days actually really, really count. So I ended up going and waiting in line, and I justified it as marketing for the podcast. I'm serious.
Right off.
Well, I mean, technically... But no. Let's see here.
Franz von Bellen says,
yeah.
Sunless Sea, definitely worth it. Apart from that, I seem to carry some kind of Kickstarter curse. Nothing I back ever reaches target.
Yeah.
Do, 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 do.
I guess that's better than it reaching its target, them taking your money, and the game never coming out.
Yeah, that would be unfortunate.
That's an objective thing. Yeah, how about you, Ben? Have you kickstarted anything? Games or otherwise?
I haven't. I am sadly not that supportive, I guess, of indie developers. I do not have a Kickstarter account or anything. I basically wait till Humble Bundles and then get games, but never play them.
Yeah, same here. High five, bro.
See, I feel like I've also never kickstarted a game.
Okay.
I feel like kind of the flaw in the system is I don't understand why Kickstarter is like, once it ends, it's like, we no longer want your money. Mm-hmm. Because fairly often I find games that aren't out yet, but I would have liked to Kickstarter if I'd known they were a thing.
There are other places, like, you know, other ways that they have extended crowdfunding. Like off of Kickstarter, most famously, Star Citizen has done that and raised like $50 million or something ridiculous for a game that's a complete pipe dream. The inmates are running the asylum, and it'll never come out. seriously, like, read up on Star Citizen; it's fucking nuts.
Just like a week ago, it now has first person shooter.
Yeah, just pile that fucking on.
Maybe their code's really modular, guys.
Yeah. A lot of places have extended their funding after the initial period. I think that makes sense, though, to set that goal, because what it does is forces it to be realistic.
Sure.
So if it was, hey, we'll just have whatever money we want after that funding is over, there's incentive to actually go and, you know, complete that thing, as opposed to, well, we just know money was always going to be coming in. Like, they would much rather have people working on finite projects as opposed to ongoing things, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. David, what does Tom say?
Tom says, Kickstarted a couple of digital cards games, Soulforge, Ascension, a couple of Planescape alikes, Torment, Tides of Numeria, and Project Eternity, Shards of the Avatar, and Elite Dangerous. The first two I've been very happy with. The rest I'm not touching until they're out. If even a couple of the RPGs are good, I'll be very happy given my nostalgia for Torment/Ultima.
Yeah. that'll kind of like segue into my answer. So I have backed some stuff, Tides of Numenera among it. Mm-hmm. And that is one that I'm really excited and looking forward to. I think it recently got delayed into 2015. We may have even spoken about it in this exact show. But I share Tom's affection for Torment, and I'm really looking forward to that. But other stuff that I've kickstarted, I've actually like not played, like the Longest Journey, like the Dreamfall chapters. Like the first episode of that came out, and I haven't touched it. I think I'm banking that up. I completely forgot that I backed Republique, which was that stealth-based game for iOS, which I'm fairly certain I backed while drunk one night. And I was checking my spam filter, and I was like, you have a game. I'm like, okay, cool, I guess. So that was a gift that Nighttime Cole gave Daytime Cole a year later. but in general, like, I've not, you know, as up until today with Thimbleweed Park, I kind of have not seen Kickstarters to back. Honestly, it seems a little bit like it's cooled down, like that the background noise of Kickstarter has slowly but surely become, let's just crank out as many like photography art books that are a cover for you guys to pay for my vacation, all the way up to it's a plastic doodad we can buy off of Alibaba and it has something to do with an iPhone, so it's going to fund it 400%. Like actual games, it kind of seems like there's a little bit of a dearth of like standout stuff, and I'm not sure if that's like because of press coverage, like people have been burned so much, but
yeah. Would have been Have there been many? What have been the big burns? Because I was expecting most Kickstarter things to fail. It seems like most have not.
The big one that I'm aware of is Code Hero.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, Code Hero. Like that guy just pretty much said, I don't know. I have your money now, I guess. Later, guys.
Yeah, I was talking... My PhD advisor, his area of research is teaching, studying how to teach people to code.
Uh-huh.
And we're talking, it's like, yeah, something I've always wanted to do is like make this game where it's like a video game that like teaches people how to code. It's like, let me explain to you why you're never getting funding for that.
Yeah, people have a little bit of a bad taste in their mouth around that. I don't know. Some of the best games I've played this year have been Kickstarter games, though.
Fran said, Sunless Sea is pretty awesome, and was, I think that was, you know, one of them that was straight up like, if this isn't Kickstarter, we can't make it.
Yeah. Same thing with Shovel Knight.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
I was not aware of at all when it was on Kickstarter, probably because it looks like a stupid, goofy, low, random kind of thing on the face of it. But it turns out it's like the best platformer that's been released in years. Might actually be my game of the year, guys.
Ooh.
I know it's a little bit early for that. Or the appropriate time for everybody else, early for us. Yeah, I don't know.
My the year's not over.
Yeah. It might be my non-Dark Souls game of the year.
There we go.
Yeah, there we are. Yeah. So that's my answer as well. Torment and Republique and now Thimbleweed Park. Let's see here. David says, yes, I have 17 projects backed so far. The only things I have gotten so far was a book from the Order of the Stick and KOL-based Mr. Card game. Kingdom of Loathing, their Mr. Card game. That being said, as of January of 2015, assuming no delays, games should start rolling out to the tune of one or so a month for the rest of the year. I'm willing to do my part to help Kickstarter games look promising because I love games and, by extension, the people who make them. It may be the Las Vegas native in me talking, but Kickstarter is a gamble that I'm willing to make for the continued success of the gaming community.
Yeah, I think that's kind of a healthy way to look at it, honestly.
Yeah, perfectly rational. I mean, that I think that is pretty in the in the spirit of what Kickstarter wants to be too. Like, oh, this is me actually voting ahead of time for what, mm-hmm. you know, for what this comes out. It's just really sad that most of the projects that fail are overextended because of rewards. That and also poor management as well. I don't know why it sounded like I was laughing at that. Ben, what does Noah say?
Noah says, just checked my backer history, figuring I'd backed maybe two or three. Turns out my totals are 13 video games, 3 physical games, and 1 gaming convention. Hooray for unexpected abundance. Notable entries include Neverending Nightmares, Mr. Card Game, a sweet noir storytelling card game called Ace Detective, and my first Gamer X convention.
Yeah.
Right on.
Yeah. There's more after that.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I think of kickstarting not as purchasing a reward, cool though they may be, but rather as contributing in some small way to the types of art I want to exist in the world. This makes it much less of a bummer when a project fails or if it is super slow to fulfill rewards, and much more heartwarming when a project turns out to be a great success.
I can't fathom the mindset of anybody who backs something on Kickstarter and then doggedly watches the release date and checks for updates and is like, you fools, when is this thing going to come out? You promised like so-and-so. It's like, no, just wait. In 2 years, hopefully, this thing is just going to come out and surprise you. Like, mm-hmm. you don't have, in a lot of ways, well, actually... legally, you don't have the right to give them a hard time about it. Like, you don't, like, they don't owe you anything after you give them something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It is like the one service where you can email yourself in like 2 years from now or whatever. It's kind of like that, where it's like, oh, I have a game now. This is great.
Yeah. Yeah. Obviously, I believe that every creator, when they get their Kickstarter funded, has an obligation to, you know, give them, you know, like give the people what they wanted. Mm-hmm. But you know, in terms of the time frame, like that is such a fruitless way to approach it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. David, why don't you round us out with Nick?
Sure. Nick says, okay. Noah, that is basically how I feel about Patreon backing a number of podcasts. Duckfeed obviously among them. I get so much content out of it, and while I enjoy the physical things I get sent, the real reason for my money is the hours and hours of taking that
of talking, I think you meant to say.
Yes. Wow. I'm sorry. I'm not in the... Hours and hours of talking that make my days less tedious. I've essentially replaced my monthly cable TV bill with a pledge to a few podcasts each month. I think that's a great trade-off. That actually is a great trade-off.
Yeah. He continues.
Oh, I'm sorry. The only game I've actually backed is a 2D exploration game called Hive Jump. It looked like something I'd check out anyway, and it was like 15 for a code. So I figured, why not? It isn't out yet, so hopefully it turns out good.
I like this. I like this question. I like the responses to it because it's providing me with a shopping list of things to like look into, because I trust our fans. And if they're saying, hey, this looks cool, it probably does look cool.
Yeah, I feel like I almost need like a review site or something that's just like here are the Kickstarters you should be considering.
Yeah, I could see that so quickly turning into graft that it's not even funny.
That's true. That's true.
Like, I don't know. Maybe this is a bleak view of the world, but the second something like that comes into existence, somebody's going to try and find a way to take advantage of it.
Yeah, maybe there's a way if you can link it only to, like, your friends or something and, like, mm-hmm. see what other people in your circles are backing.
Yeah. I don't know. Cool. Well, thank you everybody for responding to that. If you would like to participate, watch the Facebook page, which is facebook.com/thelevelpodcast every Tuesday afternoon. Guys, I'm making an executive decision for next week.
Okay.
No episode because of Thanksgiving week. Fair. I am going to be out of town. And I'm going to be with family, so I don't feel like editing it. So I apologize for anybody who was counting on having some content for the holiday. But, yeah, I don't want to do that.
Black Tuesday.
The grind.
It is now time for the grind, where we talk about the games that we have been playing over the past week or so. David, since you were not here last time, I'm volunteering you to go first.
Sure. So something I'm actually kind of excited to talk about because it's a lot of fun. When I was at the hackathon, there was a group that had hooked up a PC with controllers and was playing Broforce.
Broforce? So
have you seen this at all?
It's like, not.
It's like Contra, except with memes.
Right. It's you know, I don't know. I've never played Contra, but it's a 2D side-scrolling shooter. You know, big-time destructible environment. And lots of explosions and stuff. But the thing is, you only have one HP, so any damage will kill you.
Yeah, but you're describing like everything that makes Contra Contra.
Okay, am I? Okay, so apparently it's Contra. You know, lots of extra lives all over the place, but kind of its pitch is you're basically, all of the characters are very much, all of the bros are based off of various 80s and 90s action heroes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they keep adding, like, you know, every other patch is, you know, a couple new heroes. So it's, you know, they've got the Terminator, Indiana Jones, Ripley.
Do they have Rocky?
Huh?
Do they have Rocky?
They do not. They do not have Rocky. They have Rambo. They have Time Cop.
I like that. I can appreciate that level of pull.
Yeah. Neo. Blade. So yeah, it's just tons and tons of them. And, you know, each one controls really differently. So, like, two of my favorites are Terminator has, like, the ginormous chain gun. Mm-hmm. And so you move fairly slow. And then when you fire it, it's really, really powerful, but it actually pushes you back.
Yeah.
And another character is the chick from Planet Terror with the gun leg.
Yeah. Okay.
And so basically your play style involves like jumping over top of enemies and shooting downwards.
Hmm.
And there's like a little bit of a hover effect.
Okay.
So it's, you know, overall it's a fun game. You know, it's one of those things where I feel like a lot of games that do kind of the 80s, 90s throwback, it sort of ends up being kind of the BuzzFeed, like, let's just throw as many references at the wall as we can, and some of them will stick. Whereas I feel like this one, because it's multiplayer, so everyone's playing a different bro, and because they have such different play styles, this is something where that actually adds to the game. Mm-hmm. The other feature I really like is if you're out and the players that are still alive get an extra life, you're brought back to life, but you're brought back to life with a random character.
That's cool.
Yeah, so that's a lot of fun to be, you know, one life be the Boondock Saints, and then you know, dual pistoling everything, and then after you die to come back as Shaft and, you know, be equipped with a katana.
Shaft or Blade?
Or Blade, I'm sorry. Blaxploitation heroes.
So when you said that, I immediately just like did a complete fast motion rewatch of Shaft in my head. It's like the closest
with
thing
the katana.
Well, no, I just searched. I basically scrubbed all of Shaft for a katana, and nothing.
I couldn't figure out what was who the character was supposed to be for a long time, because it's obvious that it's supposed to be a blaxploitation character, but mm-hmm. I I'm not sure I've watched either of the movies, so I couldn't figure out.
Three. It's a whole trinity of movies.
There's nothing particularly vampire-y about that movie, apparently.
Yeah, he's just a dude, but he doesn't pay his taxes.
There's nothing really blaxploitation-y about Blade movies either.
Yeah.
Was it? I thought that was supposed to be like a blaxploitation movie.
No.
That's Black Dynamite, maybe. Wait, is that it? Yeah.
Wikipedia lied to me.
It'll do that. Yeah. Sorry, I've just been trying to look up Time Cop quotes, but apparently there are no quotes. There are no quotes from the movie Time Cop to be found on the internet. So, moving on. No, so like, was this it seems like a game that would have benefited from you being in a big room full of like-minded people playing this.
Yes.
In a raucous environment.
Also sleep deprived.
Yeah, yeah. So this is like optimal. Could you see yourself like, oh, I'm in the comfort of my own home. I would like to play Broforce. Like, is that anything you would ever do?
I could never see playing it just on my own.
Yeah.
I just don't see that. I think it's basically like a kind of bringing the action niche to a party game, basically.
Yeah.
Gotta have your bros.
Your super bros.
Your Smash Bros.
You know what? I keep getting this game mixed up with Super Time Force, which has almost an identical art style. Like that faux Terraria chunky pixel kind of look.
Yeah, it's kinda weird. It's sort of in between like 8-bit and 16-bit, so yeah. Like maybe 12-bits. But you know, it's got some of the more details provided by like 16-bit type graphics, but it's still kinda like you said, you know, real chunky.
Yeah.
You know, so that you know, it's not like lots of shading and stuff like that, but it's a real neat look.
Did you have trouble? I could see this in motion, like even the still shots, I'm having trouble discerning what's happening on the screen. Did you have trouble keeping track, or is that kind of like part of the appeal?
It's part of the appeal. Like it's a thing. You're dying a lot. I don't think you can friendly fire shoot someone, but you can definitely very easily cause explosions that friendly fire.
Right.
Like it's probably got a little bit of kind of the Magicka in its DNA.
Yeah. Yeah. So this, I'm just looking at this here. This seems almost custom made for you. I'm speaking specifically about Broforce. Have you seen or are you aware of a game whose full title is Game of the Year 420 Blaze It?
No.
Actually, you know what? That's not the full title. Sorry, I need to look it up because it has an even more ridiculous title. Sorry. Oh, yes, it is Game of the Year 420 Blaze It versus XXX Illuminati XXX bracket WoW divided by 10 # Wrecked Edition and # because it was made for a 7-day FPS jam, and essentially what it is hyper masculine first person shooter, all dubstep, Mountain Dew and Doritos everywhere. Like it's so obnoxious that it rapidly wraps back around. Like you just like look at the videos and it's like this is kind of spot on, because I could totally see somebody, like there's like Comic Sans text that like pops up saying fucking hacks and stuff. Like I could see somebody playing this and not having an ounce of irony in their bodies about it. Like finally a game for my generation.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. I'm going to have to check this out.
Yeah.
I do enjoy my overly masculine game, so you know.
Yep. Game of the Year 420 Blaze It.
Can we get more men in video games, please?
Yeah, like
what's the deal?
It's high time. It is high time. You know what? I'm very happy that somebody said something. You know, I think that was very brave of you, Ben.
Yeah, I'm ready to stand up and speak out about this.
Yeah. Wow.
Let's
end this. Let's end that bit.
Yeah, let's end that bit. David, what else? Oh, good. Sorry.
Have you seen the game Max Gentleman?
No.
No.
It's just again a game about that. Like
is it a gentleman simulator?
No, it's sort of. It's about collecting hats in very manly ways. It's one of those games where everyone in the game has to have a handlebar mustache, even the women.
Oh yes, that kind of game.
So, but unfortunately, apparently, this is something I'm considering kickstarting. Apparently, the game was inspired by a male enhancement ad they got.
Mm-hmm.
So just. Okay. Received an ad for Max Gentleman, and that just felt that they needed to make a game named that and devise a game to be justified that title.
Yeah. So just making games out of, like, I could see that being like subject for a game jam is like, here is a complete like week's worth of spam that we got. Mine this for titles and, you know, just make the thing.
It's like the equivalent of a writing prompt.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like, though, the one problem I found with that approach, though, is as I search for the game, when your game is explicitly sounds like questionable internet stuff, when you do a search for your game, you get questionable internet stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Huh.
Anyways.
Yeah, what else have you been playing?
I installed Far Cry 2, actually. That's been got real cheap on Steam, and so I never actually beat it, even though it's a game I really enjoy.
Are you gonna go for beating it?
Huh?
Are you gonna go for beating it then?
I'm going to go for beating it. We'll see how far I get. I still maintain that it's a good game, but it definitely shows its age in a lot of ways. So,
can you still fix anything with a wrench?
You can still fix anything by tightening a single screw on what I think might be the radiator.
Mm-hmm. Gotta tighten it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's bullets and explosions. They'll loose it right up. No, yeah, it's you know, still a good game, still really, really weird. You know, the enemies in it are just like supernaturally you know, have amazing sense of sight and apparently smell and hearing and echolocation, pretty much everything else.
Yeah.
So that's kind of frustrating. On the other hand, you know, sniping down an enemy camp from a mile away is, you know, kind of satisfying.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I like the fact that, you know, they do a pretty good job of making the two factions both pretty much equally unlikable. So, yeah. So I know I'm enjoyed overall.
You normally like really reject whenever a game presents anything as being like unlikable, though, especially if there's no choice, you know, outside of it. Like, isn't your primary complaint with like Dead Island, like that series, that, you know, just everybody's a monster?
Yeah, I think that's probably a legitimate thing. I'd say in this, I think it's more a thing where it's meant to be. You know, you're basically a mercenary that's coming into this situation. It's more meant to be, you know, this is a war where neither side. I guess it seems like there's more actual message to both sides being basically, you know, selfish people that take advantage of the population, if that makes sense.
Isn't the beginning of it random too, where the like the people who you have to fight, like there's like a tree of different people who you can fight, but it's kind of like random, I thought. Maybe.
Yeah, basically what it is is there's two factions. They're basically, you know, both fairly indistinguishable. I think one are technically communists and one are foreign powers attempting to exploit the people. So both basically evil. But the way you initially choose what side you fight is you wake up in the middle of a gunfight from malaria. And you can't win, but whatever part of the map you die on, that determines where you start.
Okay.
Like, how does that play out? Does it determine who rescues you?
Yeah. Basically, there's like one of four like quadrants of the map that you kind of get rescued to, and then you do, and it's, you know, each one is associated with one of the two factions, and they send you off on like a tutorial raid on one of the other encampments.
Mm-hmm. So I'm now starting to remember this again. You're going after the Jackal, right? That's the bad guy. And what are his crimes?
Basically, he's a arms dealer that is a sociopath. So he's very much, it's kind of weird playing the game because to a large degree it's kind of comes across now as like preparation for Far Cry 3. So he's sort of Voss 1.0. Mm-hmm. Where he's basically just this like psychopathic guy. He's an arms dealer. He basically equates what he does as being no different than like selling radios.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very much, it's not my fault all these people die. If these stupid Africans would stop killing each other, we wouldn't have these problems. Like, so it's very much like his role tends to be to like randomly come on scene and spout really bizarre and nonsensical philosophy.
Huh.
So, but it's much more sandboxy than the previous one. I feel like that's kind of why the two evil factions don't bother me as much. Is I feel like the point of it is you're basically trapped there. And you're basically just kind of, there aren't really any good guys, and you're just a mercenary taking advantage of the situation because you're trapped there, if that makes sense.
Have you had any, like in the time you've been playing this, you know, this time, have you had any like crazy weird systemic stuff happen? Like emergent stories, I guess marketers would call it.
I'm trying to think. Not so much so far. I mean, there's... Not really.
No is an acceptable answer.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
So.
Cool. I forget, did you play Far Cry 3?
Yes, I did. Okay. Although, kind of my lead into this is I got to, like, the last, say, like, three missions Far Cry 3 and got away from it. I initially bought Blood Dragon on the cheap, figuring I'd play through that, get back into the swing of things, and then beat Far Cry 3.
Uh-huh.
And then Uplay decided to stop working. And
it'll do that.
Yeah. And Ubisoft's tech support is awful.
Hmm.
So in the meantime, I'm playing Far Cry 2.
Yeah. On Steam, a platform that works.
Yes. To the point where the crash message directs you to look at a error dump, and when I sent that error file to tech support, they informed me that they couldn't open that file.
It just had like a log, like an error dump, like a text. file?
You know, it's like some basically like HTML type thing they made that, you know, puts it all in, you know, pretty context. But like, why would you have the debug information, one, be something your text can't open, and two, why would you explicitly direct people to that file?
I don't know. Yeah, I've had nothing but bad experiences with Uplay. I'm bummed out because I just want everything to be in Steam.
Yeah.
And so I'm looking at, like, you know, Dragon Age Inquisition, you know, with just lustful intent. Like, oh my gosh, I want to play this so bad. But I kind of am dreading getting it because I know I'm going to have to dip into Origin, which is so monumentally not a problem. You know, like, I've used Origin before. It works, I suppose. But for some reason, there's just friction associated with that that I'd rather not have, like, in my life.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't entirely get why Ubisoft and stuff do this. I guess they make money from being directly on their own platform, I guess.
It comes down to it. So Steam takes 30% of whatever sale is made, right? Like, that 30% is the distributor's cut. And by owning their own platform and funneling people in through that, they get to hold on to that 30%. And when people play an Ubisoft or an EA game and they have to go into either Origin or Uplay, they are exposed to marketing for other Ubisoft or EA games, thus perpetuating the buying cycle. So those are the two benefits that they get from that.
See, but I feel like make it work.
But that costs money, and you know, it's much easier to find a way to put more ads in front of somebody than to.
I was going to say, instead of the buying cycle, it's the infuriation cycle for me. For advertisements.
Oh, yeah, the infuriation. Okay, there we go. Yeah. Huh. I don't know. I think I talked myself into a dead end there. But Far Cry 2. Do you have any intention to play Far Cry 4?
Yes. I am really excited for Far Cry 4. Unfortunately, I currently do not own a system it will work on.
Yeah.
So there's a good chance that's going to be what pushes me to get a PlayStation 4.
Even though it's first person?
I know. I feel like I'm getting increasingly frustrated with some of the shenanigans from PC gaming. It's basically the same as console gaming now anyways.
So getting a PS4 is the cheapest way to play these games you want to play.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Huh. Cool. Is that all?
Yes, that is it.
Ben, how about you? I'm really excited to hear about this.
Yeah, because I continue playing Shadows of Mordor. And so it's fun, I guess.
A ringing endorsement.
Yeah, I know, right? So I was kind of baiting the switch because I thought I was near completing the game, and it turns out there's more to it than I thought. So it's fine. I think the game relies very, very heavily on the Nemesis system, which isn't a bad thing necessarily. So the way that, I think I dipped into this a little bit last week, but the way the system works is the cool thing about it is anytime you die, so anytime somebody kills you, they will be recruited into Sauron's army, and they'll be given a name as soon as they kill you. So it's kind of it's really neat that it is very dynamic. So, like, if you mess up and a person with a shield kills you, they will join the army, and then their nickname might be related to, you know, like, whatever sort of class the person is. There's also some pretty funny people. I think when they initialize the army, like when you start off taking down people in the army, that's when they kind of have more playful nicknames and playful classes of people.
Yeah.
So I think one of the early on ones, there was one who was named the Rhymer, and he just spoke in rhymes. It was an orc that spoke in rhymes, so that was cute. There was one who was a beheader, and he had like human heads all on spikes all around him. So I don't know. Some of the character design is pretty cool, but it's a whole lot of fun as far as like trying when stuff starts to go down. So there's one thing I don't think I mentioned this last week is there's different areas in the map. Maps that are called strongholds, mm-hmm. and that's where the war chiefs are. And so the war chiefs are the top of the army, I guess, or the highest up. I guess Sauron is above those. But they kind of hang out at strongholds that are on the map, and so they might be like castles or some sort of forts or some sort of just fortified area. But the thing is they all have conditionals for them to come out. So you need to do some sort of task to get them to come out of their, solitude or whatever. So one of them is like kill 35 people in this person's area and then he'll come out and fight you. One of them's like kill 20 people in 2 minutes or something like that. So it's just various challenges. Not all of them are kill people, but most of them are.
Yeah.
But the cool thing about it is whenever they come out to fight you, every war chief has a certain number of people under them. And so I think it's like 3 rows of 8 is kind of like the army, the factions, where it's like captain to, I don't know, sergeant, or I don't know what the rankings are. But each of the 4 or 5 war chiefs have a certain number of those people that are under them. And so whenever you try and fight the war chiefs, you also have to fight the 4 or 5 people under them.
Yeah.
Alternatively, you can try and take those people out ahead of time. So you can interrogate any NPC. The issue is that interrogating them takes a little bit of time, like as far as like to get into that mode. So if there's multiple people, someone will take a swing at you before you can interrogate them. But you can slowly gather information from the last person remaining when you go and fight random people. And so you can gain information about the strengths and weaknesses of each of the people in the army. And eventually you can gain strengths and find out the strengths and weaknesses of the war chiefs.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, that aspect of it is actually pretty fun. Exploring the world is okay. It's kind of lived in, but it's definitely not as detailed as something like Arkham City or Arkham Asylum.
Seems not as dense as either of those, right?
That's true too. So the world perhaps doesn't have as much character as some other open world games. So that might be the only sticking point or lacking point.
Yeah.
But it is still a whole lot of fun killing the different enemies and kind of finding out about the army system. I got to a point in the game where I kind of moved, where I thought the game was going to be over, but I found out there was more than just the map that you start out with.
Okay.
And so you kind of have more army to take care of outside of the initial batch. So, but that's not a criticism at all, because that's kind of the fun part of the game. So,
yeah. Did you feel like that is a pacing issue? Like that you just kind of feel like you're coming up to the end of it and you're accepting that and you're fine with it, but there's, I guess I'm just going to continue playing this game then. Because that's a little bit of what it sounds like, but I want to make sure that that's accurate.
Yeah, I mean, I think overall this game is just going to be okay. It's definitely a cool new system, but I think it needs a little bit more depth to it, I guess, as far as not only the story, but the world that you're in. So,
yeah.
But it seems like it's definitely a good first try. The company that makes it, Monolith, I don't know what any of their earlier projects are. So
they did like Fear, they did the Condemned games, like pretty good stuff.
Okay,
they are a good studio, capital G, capital S.
The game is very reminiscent of the Arkham games, not only because I believe they use the same engine since they have the same fighting system, but also like a lot of the voice acting is British, so that's another thing, another similarity. But yeah, it's weird having like British orcs and having them taunt you all the time too.
Yeah, but they're it's Hulk speak, right?
What do you mean?
it's Hulk speak. Me crush you now.
Smash.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, I was thinking of Hulk Hogan. I'm like,
he just calls everybody brother.
Yeah. Just really friendly orcs. Yeah. No, but I do have one Nemesis system story, I guess. Okay. There is one person in the first world who I have not been able to kill. So it's kind of like an accelerating treadmill where if you don't kill a person, they gain power. If they kill you instead of you killing them, they get stronger and stronger. And so there's one person who I tried to kill and messed up many times in a row. So he's at like the max power level 20. And so I haven't been able to kill him. He can like he almost like one hits me with his weapon. He has these poison scythes that he throws at you. And that's kind of that's one thing that's cool is like as their power increases, they'll get kind of specialized gear and their like their appearance will change. So that's kind of cool as they get like promoted. But yeah, man, it's Tars the Brewer is the name, you know, and it's he's kind of a bastard. So it's fun that that is dynamically generated, but that you can have that sort of experience. So emergent experience, as you would say.
Yeah. So in the probably literally hours that I've heard people talk about this game and in other shows, I've not had anybody allude to there actually being a main quest.
No. Like, I mean there's like a kind of like a paper thin storyline going on there, but it's I don't know. Maybe if I were more into Lord of the Rings I'd be interested in it, but
Yeah. But I mean like is there, you know, how directed is this? Are they ushering you along to a next goal or is it more like hey, there's a like an encampment over here that you haven't looked at. Maybe there's somebody you should kill.
So sometimes they'll have missions that are, you know, true and true missions and, you know, things to do that are new. But I definitely got to a point in the game where my only mission was to kill the war chiefs. And that was, you know, and that took time to do, you know. So it gets to a point where they definitely run out of missions. So it's... Yeah, again, it's a good first game. So I feel kind of similar to how I felt about like Tomb Raider with this, where it's like it's a pretty good first game, but I think there's room for improvement with future titles.
Show me what's next. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
it's bizarre to think that there is a AAA game that's out this year that is really well received that just is kind of lacking. Well, not even so much that. Like I guess you could say that, you know, what I'm going to say is a symptom of that, but like that doesn't rely on bespoke, like narrative prescribed, you know, content, I guess. Right. Like this is not like a Grand Theft Auto 5 where there is a very strong
story,
a very strong, like mandated through line through it, I guess.
Yeah.
As opposed to like a couple of milestones that you're supposed to hit, but like pretty much everything else is connective tissue.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, maybe, you know, maybe if someone were more into Lord of the Rings, it would be a more interesting storyline. I don't know if it's my bias or not. So
are you like actively against Lord of the Rings? Like, are you just aggressively non-interested or?
No, I'm just passively non-interested.
Yeah. Like you've never been that much of a fantasy guy.
Yeah, I mean, I like sci-fi, but not... I like future fiction, not past fiction, I guess. Yeah.
I get that. Huh. Well, I'm glad you're kind of liking it.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say I'd probably have it beat in another week or two, so...
Nice.
Yep.
Huh.
Yep.
Anything else?
Let's hear about your fantasy game.
Yeah. No, sorry. I closed out the Facebook tab because the multiplayer we're done with the multiplayer. Instead, there's an article behind this that has like one of those trending now widgets on the side of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, like, oh, here is popular content that you may like to see that, you know, we're monetizing your eyeballs on. And at the top of the trending now list is the following headline. Girl literally shits her pants while twerking in white leggings. Parentheses video.
What is this? What is this on?
I don't.
Why does it have to do? Is this like a new video game?
No, this is this has nothing to do with video games. Like,
can we make it into a new video game?
No. Earlier in the day, somebody tagged me in a comment about an article that was about wearing the same thing every day. And mm-hmm. I skimmed it, and you know, I was disgusted, but not disgusted enough to like close this off, because it's about like simplify, man, life hack your shit. It's like, well, no, you're talking about this like it is, you know, the new hip Silicon Valley thing to do, as opposed to what it really is, which is compulsion. But no, it's on a site called Elite Daily, and then just off to the side, trending now. This poor woman shits herself in white pants for your amusement on the internet. Also, twerking is involved because those kids, am I right? And cell phones, too.
Trending.
Trending. Hashtag trending. Oh, wait a minute. Let's see here. I'm going to do a search for, around hashtag trending. See what that pulls up. Oh, The Gap. Neat. It's all sponsored content. It is all sponsored content, you guys. Fuck me. Like, does everybody just go back to bed?
Like, try again tomorrow.
Mind if I do?
There's nothing for you here. Just go back to bed. Okay. So, I am played shit, aside from Morrowind, by which I mean to say I played about 40 hours of it within a week. And so I'm playing that for another show, playing it for Watch Out for Fireballs, but I feel like I'd be remiss if I didn't like say something, you know, about it here, because it is kind of like this all consuming thing. And I feel like we've dipped into and out of talking about like Skyrim, you know, here, like specifically over the length of, you know, this show and its predecessor, right? Mm-hmm. Like Elder Scrolls is somewhat of a minor touch point. And Morrowind has been kind of a minor blind spot for me. And so having played all of the main quest, I can like safely enumerate a bunch of things that I really like about it. And also, you know, talk about the ways that I feel that Oblivion and to a greater extent Skyrim was an improvement beyond that. That said, I've only done the main quest, and already in the Fighter's Guild quest, I'm seeing a lot of subtleties and nuances that are like, oh, this is the game that everybody talks about.
Okay.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So like, so good.
So first things first, what race are you rolling as?
I am rolling as a Red Guard, and my starting class was a Knight.
Okay.
Cause that was like a nice mix of melee, and that is pretty much pulled explicitly from Before I Play. So if you go to, I believe it is beforeiplay.net or .com, it is a wiki. It's beforeiplay.com. It is a wiki that has a lot of articles, most of which are combed from a Something Awful thread. You know, like, what should I know about, you know, this game? And, you know, the kind of the prevailing wisdom around Morrowind is that both stealth and magic are effectively useless in combat, and if you're looking for like a beginner's approach, which I very much am, you want to go with a knight. That, or, you know, like just a, like melee combat is a very fruitful way. That, and if you don't have something as your primary skill, you can effectively level it up limitlessly. Mm-hmm. So like I focused a lot on alchemy because you can make some really useful potions, and so that didn't count against my level cap.
And that is like break the game.
Well, yeah, that too. But that's more, you know, just for expediency's sake.
Yeah.
Also, yeah. I won't say that making stuff in that game is fun. I think that almost universally the interface is hot garbage. Like I don't know. Like there are so many just modern conveniences about doing the simplest thing in a modern Elder Scrolls or Fallout game that even those are not fantastic, but this, oh my gosh. Like, learn how to present information in your interfaces. And what's weird is, for as much as those games are modded, I'm playing a very heavily modded version of the game, like visually and, you know, just like gameplay and bug fixes. There is not like a make this game easy to play, like, or not a complete tedious chore to do the most basic stuff. So you're...
Isn't that kind of Elder Scrolls thing?
I mean... Okay, so like there's a part of it that is a little bit like that's, you know, that's its thing. Like, it's charming that every quest giver, and now I'm just cannibalizing stuff I'm going to say and watch out for fireballs. It's pretty cool that you have to listen to their directions and it feels like you're discovering this world as you are following those directions. Like, you know, walk down this river until you see a bridge and then follow the rocky path until so-and-so. And it's like, yeah, it's a bit of a pain to write that down or remember it, you know, specifically because all of the names are possibly the most off-putting fantasy garbage.
Hot garbage.
Yeah. It's like literally just somebody spilled a Scrabble board. And was like, we're going to make you A, remember that person's name, and B, pick them out of a crowd.
Well, especially Morrowind is kind of the crazy, you know, the crazy town of the Elder Scrolls setting.
Oh, yeah, it's great. I love it. Like, just how varied all of it is. Like, you know, the fact that it's like you're running around inside the guts of giant fleas to do fast travel, and everything is mushrooms and crabs. Like, that is infinitely more interesting than here is just a verdant forest for you to mayhap find a unicorn upon. Yeah. I don't know.
So,
good.
Do you have any missions that have stood out for you so far? Or is this making you ruin more of future podcasting material?
I feel like it's making me ruin more of it. I feel like I like the premise of the main quest a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like it does the whole you are the chosen one, but like in an interesting way that kind of I haven't really seen before, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And the main quest so far is kind of the least interesting thing about this game. There's a twist that's introduced in the Fighters Guild early on that like rewards you for kind of paying attention and talking to people and sensing, oh, something's not quite right here. And like what I thought was going to be a, like, you're going to have to do every single quest in this guild turns into more of a, like, you need to learn who, like, whose side you want to be on. And that affects the way that this goes. And that level of subtlety and nuance is something that's like not present in later, you know, in later entries. Like, everything very much is like this is the Fighters Guild quest line, go for it, as opposed to this, which is I think far more textured and interesting. And I don't know if the other guilds are going to be like that, but it is kind of, I felt like I was running out of steam. This is possibly the biggest game we're ever going to do for assignment. Like, I've already put in just about as much time as I sunk into Final Fantasy VII when we did that for the, you know, for the three episodes, and that is just one episode's worth of material. You know, for like for the game, and I am foregoing a lot of other stuff in order to fit as much of this in as I can. So like
should make it a two-parter episode
and just cover less of it.
Well, just make it seem like it's more fruitful, I guess, or, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's fruitful. Like, I'm finding stuff to say about it, and yeah, I don't know. But I think that when it is off my log, when it's off my list, I'm going to feel more comfortable about like buying Dragon Age Inquisition and jumping into that massive RPG. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh boy. I speaking of that, I hadn't really read anything about it. You know, about that game, just because I wanted to go into it fresh. But sometime over the past week, I did the Dragon Age Keep, which is what they're doing in lieu of having save game transfers, right? Because they're crossing they're crossing generation, and that's not possible. And so what the Dragon Age Keep is, it is like a web app experience that walks you through all of the choices that you may or may not have made. Mm-hmm. And one version of it plays out like the great hero of the Grey Wardens did so and so. What do you do, my warrior? Don't do that. Like, that is terrible. It is like very bad CSS animation. The art is fine, but it just like, I don't need to be here all day. The tapestry is the one that you want to do, because that kind of like is a broader representation of like what are the possible choices that you could have made. And while a great deal of the choices are like, I have no idea what the fuck I did, because I played this game, you know, 5-7 years ago, something like that. I guess it would have been like more like 6. But there were some choices that, you know, there were enough of the good choices that it added up into less of a what the fuck is Dragon Age, into more of like a, oh, I remember really liking this world and also really liking these games, and it served to effectively get me hype about this game that I was more just kind of like, I'll get around to it. Like, I feel a very marked need to jump into Inquisition.
Mm-hmm.
That, and also it's getting great reviews.
Yeah, that's what I've heard as well. So what was Origins, the last one?
No, Dragon Age 2.
Okay.
Yeah, which a lot of people didn't like, but I kind of do.
Yeah, I'm going to be on the side I didn't like it that much.
Oh, you play? I forgot that you played it.
Yeah, I played it about a year ago.
Yeah, I suppose you did. I remember we had like great conversations about it too, didn't we? About how like it's a game where like there's about a set of heroes that can't not fuck up.
Yeah. It's whatever.
Oh. Yeah. We're drawing up on time. You guys wanna button it up?
Yeah, I guess so.
So thank you everybody for listening to level number 84. We really appreciate you taking the time. As we said, there's not going to be an episode next week over Thanksgiving. Enjoy that. enjoy your time with people, everybody here, and also everybody listening. But in the meantime, there's all the usual stuff. Since we're not going to have an episode around Black Friday, if you're doing any online shopping through Amazon over the holidays, we would really appreciate if you went to duckfeed.tv/tipjar and use that pass-through link. It is an affiliate thing. We get a cut, but it doesn't cost you anything extra, and that goes a long way towards helping to cover our expenses here. Yeah, that's a big thing you can do. Also, like us on Facebook. The conversation has been on and popping there. So I appreciate everybody who has been kicking us articles and such. It's a great place to be. So that is facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. And I'm not going to belabor this admin too much. Is there anything I'm forgetting, guys?
Have a good Thanksgiving.
Yeah. All right. So I've been Cole Ross, at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been David Moneysmith at Moneysmith777 on Twitter, and I still am.
I've been Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter.
Yeah. And you better watch your back, because you might get shanktified.
Here's like a weird sort of, I don't even know what meme it would be, but so the webcam on my laptop is broken, right? Or it doesn't work, right?
Okay.
I put duct tape over it anyway because I'm paranoid about how it could be accessed. Is that weird?
That's probably wise.
Not paranoid at all.
All right. Good. I'm not crazy if the three of us is the general population.
Oh, okay. So wait a minute, let's roll this back just a second. I mean, apply some rigor to this. You should know that this is not the most representative sample.
Yeah, that's fine. You got to take the small victories.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, at least one of us has studied network security, which tends to make one paranoid.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and at least one of us speaks daily with people who try and break those rules.
Exactly.
You are right. In fact, I think that you're not being cautious enough.
No.
If you're not podcasting to me into a pine cone in a cabin in the middle of Idaho like I am. Oh, did I tell you guys I moved?
I commute every Tuesday.
Yeah. I have no idea how you're hearing me.